welcome to episode 236 of the Star Wars Report. This week, we're talking Star Wars drones. We're talking John Williams episode 8, reactions to the Rogue One International trailer, as well as an EU story about Alan Tudyk playing Cade Tuso. Quesadilla. Either way, we've got that story coming up on the Star Wars Report. Hey, welcome back to the Star Wars Report. This is episode 236. Welcome one, welcome all. You're right, you're not here to Riley. That's okay, because for once, even though he's not here, he's here. Isn't that right, Riley?
Good morning, or good afternoon, good evening. Please delete as appropriate. You know I had to do it, guys.
That's right. If there was a way, we'd make it.
I have work this morning and this weekend. I'm getting ready for school, so I appreciate you guys being able to take the helm of the show this week. But of course, as I was joking with a certain gentleman a few minutes ago, I can't help myself. I've got to at least make a small appearance at the beginning, so I'm just literally calling in from Skype on my phone. That gentleman I was just talking to is the producer of this very program and co-host this week. Bruce, how's it going, man?
It's going great. I actually thought that we had the teacher gone and that we could actually do whatever we wanted to do, but you showed up anyway.
I'm like, you thought there would be like a substitute, and then it's like, surprise, everybody. Mr. Blanton showing up and just to make sure everybody behaves.
Yeah, Bruce, I didn't do my homework, so because I didn't think you would be here. So my homework's not done.
He had a moving crew. We were ready to move the couches around. Nice. Well, you know how this show goes. Once again, we couldn't do this without you guys and gals out there that are supporting us, the fine patrons. You can go and help support the show at patreon.com/Star Wars Report. We always appreciate that. That's how we're able to do these extra bonus episodes that you guys have heard. We had this one last 2 weeks ago now with Steve Glosson was on. Real fun episode talking about the staying power of Star Wars fandom. And we're going to have more of those kind of fun things. We've got the patron meetups. We've got some t-shirts. We got all sorts of fun stuff. And that's all possible basically because of you patrons out there. You fine, fine patrons who've supported us thus far. Bruce, how have you been, man? We haven't really had you on the show proper, like proper. And even though Riley's here, I feel like, you know, it requires a, how you been, Bruce?
I've been actually doing really well because I have been traveling the globe. I've been, well, I shouldn't say really the globe. I mean, I just went to England and France, and then this past week, then I went to Disney World, and then I just got back from Oklahoma City because I work with a TV network, and we had some work to do out there.
Man, you've been all over the place. Nice. Nice.
International man of mystery.
That's true.
Bruce Gibson.
Speaking of mystery, I think we have something to report.
Data brought to us by the Bothan spies.
We can send a clear transmission.
There it is. Listen.
All right. Our first story is official Star Wars drones from Propel. You know, we had this on the docket a while back. It was one that I was checking it out. I got really excited by the videos and stuff that were inside this, the displays and stuff. This was actually back from Celebration Europe. And the makers of Propel, they have these fun little mini quad propelling drones. Like, I'm not very familiar with drones in general, aside from they're really cool looking. And these ones take really cool looking to a whole new level. Have you had a chance, Bruce, to check this out yet?
Yeah, I mean, it's really awesome because I don't have a drone or anything, but these things like fly around like wasps, you know, they almost look like insects to me as they just like whip around real quick, but they look like Star Wars vehicles that you can just fly around and shoot lasers out of. So you want to probably do this in the dark so you can actually see those lights, but it's awesome looking.
The real catch here is that, like, I love drones, and the thing is they've gotten so much more affordable in recent years. I so badly want like some of the ones that you can use to shoot like YouTube videos or something like that. But you know, you guys know that it was only a matter of time as these things kind of became more and more commercially viable as the prices came down, that there was going to be a Star Wars version. Like, that had to be a thing.
Well, even when they were talking about having the anti-drone drones when Episode 7 was filming and stuff, and they're like, drones are getting photos, and we're like, we need them in X-Wings! We need them shooting them down! Like, someone was paying attention. CEO Darren Matoff He was talking with Andy Guerra of the Star Wars show at Celebration, and he had this amazing, just amazing boxes and stuff that they had with it. But he said some things that I was kind of like, I had to take a moment. I was just like, wait, did you really just say what I think you said? I mean, this packaging is epic, okay? But he did kind of say that the packaging was out there. It was made for the true Star Wars fan who was a collector. And I'm like, wait, like, that's something I would say, like, only, like, in a room of people that wouldn't dare repeat that out loud, you know? Because, like, well, that whole true fan thing is a dangerous area to play with.
You know what, that when he says for a collector, that's code for expensive.
Yes, yes. Well, that's what's interesting about this is, okay, so it's a lot like the Sith holocron. We've got the Imperial Handbook, the Jedi Path, which was set in, like, a Jedi holocron-like box. That they had these interactive things. And this one does someone similar. When it opens each time, it's to a different type of sound effect and stuff. Really cool looking. But what scares the hell out of me here is the fact that they can travel in speeds of up to and over 35 miles an hour. You know, you're watching these things zip around, and you're watching somebody that's, you know, they're professional. They've been doing this for hours at a time. They really know their ups and downs and can get close to somebody's head without careening into them. I'm afraid I'm going to get a hold of one of these, and it's going to be something you're seeing on Ridiculousness with Rob Dyrick. You know, you're like, oh, he just enlarged that propeller into that kid's head. Like, I don't know, like, the speeder bike looks really cool, but those little propellers swinging around, I'm like, I don't know how safe this is going to be. But, man, you can't get around how awesome these things look. I don't think in the realm of pricing, I don't think this is going to be something that you're going to see. It's not going to be like the BB-8 toy. Like, we're looking at probably 500 plus. I don't know. You guys think a commercial thing that's like under 50 bucks, it's going to be cheap like those foam ones, right? Like those AirHog type things?
See, that would be cool. I would totally go for that. Although, to be honest, though, I still want the one with a video camera. We have to have a video camera mounted on top of a speeder bike. Like, that would be amazing. So that you could get, like, first-person footage. Yeah, no, absolutely. I can't wait. I'm so glad you brought that back in. And I wish, I mean, hey, if Vintage Works is listening, like, send us a review unit.
Well, see,
because I totally do that.
That's the thing that it reminded me of was, and I put it in the show notes. Vintage Works, they have a speeder bike that is a working motorcycle, which you know that it led me to that putting that story into the show notes because the way that these model makers that do toys, you know, usually we see Star Wars model makers, they make the props, you know, they make all the really fun stuff. But now to see the toy marketing actually getting that level of on point with what they're making. I mean, they've got a working speeder bike that's a working motorcycle. You know, I was watching the video on that and, you know, granted, you don't see them doing, they're not doing 35 miles an hour plus on that thing. They're just putting around with their feet down, but the details on that, I've added two links. I'll put them into the show note. But the second one, it's short but loud. It's a loud test. And, like, they got, like, the throttle, the sound of the throttle for the speeder bike working with it and stuff. And, I mean, it is loud. I was impressed with it. And the bike tires will raise and lower. Like, again, you know, hats off to the toy model makers, man. They're really taking it to a next level.
I wish they would think outside the box more because the speeder, it's not going to go that fast. So it's not like you can drive in traffic in this thing, but I would like it to be a lawnmower because I would love to get a riding lawnmower speeder bike. Just go around my yard with those things since they don't go that fast. That would be awesome.
You know, get that with the Dyson Sphere ball as the little drive motor so you can kind of do a precision little corner in the corner.
Is that that would be like the malfunctioning speeder bike, Bruce. That would be like, can you imagine if the Ewok hopped on the speeder bike and instead of going, it was more like a just kind of crawled along.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah.
You know, when we become old men, we're going to be in those little rascals and they're all going to be Star Wars decked out. We're going to be going through the aisles of grocery stores and speeder bikes.
Mine will say, I break for imps. Our next story actually comes from our own StarWarsReport.com. Williams is going to score episode 8, which, of course, you know, we probably picked up somewhere else, who's probably a little closer to the actual source. But, you know,
yes, let me tell you guys all about this because this is like this story really hits home for me, and then I'm going to have to unfortunately bounce. So I'm going to come in and out on this story, guys. So John Williams is now unofficially officially confirmed in that he himself confirmed he was performing at a with his home orchestra, the Boston Pops, last week, I believe, maybe it was the week before. And in like one of the little Q&A sessions that he did, he was talking about episode 8, and he said, yeah, no, I'm actually getting ready to start work on that in a few weeks. And he said the reason was he couldn't stand letting anybody else compose music for Daisy Ridley, because John Williams evidently has an epic crush on the actress who portrayed Ray.
Who doesn't?
Exactly. True exactly. That. I mean, let's all be honest. Here's the more important thing, guys. We're in the planning stages for Dragon Con, which I can't wait for. And in fact, I don't think it's in the notes, but I'm just going to take the time here because we're not going to have that much time to promote because we're getting like in the last 2 weeks. So, guys, stay tuned to my and our Twitter at Star Wars Report and, of course, at The Riley Guy, because very soon I'm going to be putting out announcements for like literally a half a dozen different panels that we're all going to be involved in. Bruce is involved. I'm involved. Bethany's involved. And one of them is a John Williams panel, The Music of Star Wars. And I am so excited to have the opportunity to host this. And I was just doing some research for it yesterday, Bruce. And the fact that John Williams is back for episode 8, a surprise, but not a surprise. I think as long as he's, you know, in good health and enjoying himself, you have to use him. Yeah. Like, it's like contractually obligated. Or maybe not contractually obligated, but obligated by anyone who has a soul and likes Star Wars. So as long as he can do that, do it. But here's the thing about John Williams, and this is just a little preview. The panel is going to be Monday, 1 p.m. at the Marriott A706. If you're going to Dragon Con, make sure you're there. And I'm doing research into the influences of John Williams, and I already know a lot of them. Like, for example, that Holst the Planets, and of course Wagner, and a lot of other classical music. But a more modern phenomenon of music that he was inspired by quite a bit was this a gentleman, Erich Wolfgang Kohnberg. I think I have the name right. I don't have any notes in front of me, guys.
Composers have to have the name Wolfgang? That seems very popular.
I know, it is. Although John Wolfgang Williams kind of does have a ring to it. But he, because I grew up, guys, watching, and I've talked about this a little bit, but because I grew up overseas, we just had like a handful of VHS tapes that we would watch over and over again. And a lot of them would be these old swashbuckling movies and westerns. And one of them was Errol Flynn's The Seahawk. Mm. This is taped off of TV in our collection. Like, I think our grandmother taped it off of TV, and we took it overseas. And we watched that movie so many times. It came out in 1940, and Errol Flynn plays this Captain Thorpe, I believe. It's been like 15 years since I've seen it, guys. But we watched it so many times as a kid. And it was composed, the music was composed by Kohnberg. Mm-hmm. And he is super talented. And he really was the guy who ushered in the era of using the leitmotif, a.k.a. a character theme. Oh, as I drop my phone. I'm getting so excited, guys. of using basically character themes and introducing them in film scores, in big grand film scores. So this is like the era of – this is what would lead into King of Kings and Ben-Hur and the Ten Commandments, like all of these big epic Hollywood score films that were so popular in the 40s, 50s, and 60s that had fallen out of favor until people like John Williams took up the mantle in the blockbusters of, you know, the 80s. Hmm. So I'm so fascinated by John Williams, and I just wanted to share that brief insight because, like, the man is so brilliant in the way he uses music. You have to understand the sort of the weight of musical history that he taps into so well. So I absolutely cannot wait for him to return for episode 8. And now it's got to happen. He's got to make it push through to episode 9, guys. It's just got to be one final trilogy.
Yes. He will. He's got to. I mean, I'm convinced it'll be episode 9. I mean, even if they go to episodes 10 through 12, we probably won't see him for those. Maybe, maybe not. But definitely, he's got to get to 9.
He's like, can I get the plot points so I could just give you a generalized theme just in case? Because I'm worried here, guys. He's like, symphony score themes, I'm bringing them back.
Well, that's what I was pleased about with episode 7 is the fact that he did get to score it. And I mean, he is getting up there in age, and I thought, well, at least if he gives us the themes in episode 7, if somebody else has to run with it, he's established them for him.
Yeah, and Kiner showed us that people can do a very good knockoff, if you will. I don't know. I didn't feel like it was a complete knockoff. I thought it was more of an homage, but I think it's proven that you can get that signature sound without having to be John Williams. But if you got John Williams, why not? You know, I mean, that just makes sense.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and it's pretty early in the process for him to start working because, you know, Episode 8's not scheduled for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. I think it was Furious Fanboys. There's someone I was – I don't remember the source, but they were speculating maybe this means that they kind of were – combining a lot of rumors about like Hasbro's limited involvement with release with Rogue One material, plus John Williams starting work early. Maybe that means they move the release of Episode 8 up. Maybe they're ahead of schedule. I'm not sure if I believe. I'm pretty skeptical of that, but that'd be interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Riley, I'd hate to keep you from saving lives.
Yeah.
I know you probably got to get rolling.
I got to bounce, gentlemen.
Yeah, can you tell us exactly where you are? Are you, like, in the bathroom or something at the pool?
Oh, no. Well, I'm actually hanging out under a pavilion at the Plantera Ridge Community Pool, Peachtree City, where I'm getting ready to start work here. Yep, I'm going to keep the people safe. Although it's getting really quiet this time of year, so...
Yeah,
we're in the final phases of Riley's lifeguard adventures.
Nice. Well, Riley, again, right. Thanks for being on, my man. We'll catch you next week, of course.
Absolutely, Bruce, guys. Stay tuned. Just two parting notes, and I'm sure you guys will mention it again at the end. But just remember, stay tuned to our social media for DragonCon announcements very soon. I'll be putting up a blog post on the website detailing all of the events we're involved in at DragonCon in the very near future. Make sure you come to them and say hi. And I think we're going to be scheduling a meetup as well. So we're working on all of that. And in fact, if you're going to Dragon Con, here's my Riley's parting note. This is the important thing. If you are going to Dragon Con in Atlanta, Georgia, we're going to be doing a meetup. You guys remember this for the super successful one that we did at Celebration Europe. Now is your time. I don't have weeks and weeks to remind you guys. This is like, we'll have two shows before Dragon Con. So if you're listening to this, if you hear the sound of my voice, then fire off an email to StarWarsReport@gmail.com. Put the subject line Dragon Con in and just say, hey, I'm going. And that way we can actually organize and say, hey, let's meet up here and make it a thing. So that's what you want to do. Bruce, Mark, it's good to talk to you guys. And I'll catch you when we get back to the full show next week.
Always, my man. Be safe. Swim safe.
All right, see ya.
Safe swimmers.
Thank you for riding Star Tours.
Bye-bye. Now, Bruce, keeping it with the John Williams theme, there was a question I actually had for you. Are you a threshold listener? Is there any volume point at which you cross a threshold and have an emotional or a physical reaction to certain composers? I know I am definitely that way. Like, my wife, she's always like, how can you not hear that? I have to have it where my teeth are rattling in the back of my head, you know, those crescendos that build up and that kind of carry you away. Are you a threshold listener?
So I like to put the volume at a point as if I am in the orchestra pit. So I don't want it like really, really loud. And I don't want it soft. I want it to sound as if I am sitting there with a live orchestra, as if those violins are just a few feet in front of me. So I try to get at that same volume, which is sometimes hard in the car. I max it all the way up to the top, and it's still not loud enough for me.
Yeah. See, yeah, that's me. I've got to feel the goosebumps riding, you know. And I think that leads me to our next story here, because we've seen Rogue One trailers, we've seen Rogue One teasers, we've seen Rogue One, oh, what was the word they had for the Celebration one? Oh, fluff, no, there was a better word for it. Bruce, what was it? I don't remember. The sneaker reel, the teaser
Fan
reel?
Candy.
Yeah. Well, I finally saw a trailer that gave me goosebumps riding my goosebumps. And that was the Rogue One International trailer, which also was followed up by a really great Beastie Boys Sabotage mashup, which I also included in the links. But that International trailer, holy cow. I'm going to go ahead and play it real quick. I know, Bruce, you're not going to be able to hear it because of the way the mixer's set up, but it is picking it up on the recording. So I'm going to play it real quick, the quick minute and 39 seconds of Oh My Gosh Awesome that I believe came from Japan. That is if my web browser will actually load. But you know, the last trailer, I was talking about how I didn't feel like we needed to have the trailer. I felt like, you know, we were good. And here it comes.
The world is coming undone. Imperial flags reign across the galaxy.
we have intercepted a coded Imperial transmission. It indicates that a major weapons test is imminent.
The message was sent by your father.
We need to know what it is and how to destroy it. This is our chance to make a real difference.
If you're really doing this, I want to help.
Good.
Good. I've been recruiting for the Rebellion for a long time.
We destroyed our home.
We fight the Empire now.
I fear nothing. All is as the Force wills it.
Every day they grow stronger.
What will you do when they catch you? What will you do if they break you? If you continue to fight, what will you become?
Are you with me?
All the way.
May the Force be with us.
May the Force be with us. Always.
It's so great to hear that line at the end.
I think this trailer really did the most for me. Like, you know, like I said, the last trailer, I felt like, well, I didn't need to see it. And I really kind of was going with that perception from there on. Like, I really didn't think any other trailer was going to get to me. And I think it was the moment where you hear Andor, I believe is his name, the guy that looks like Biggs, where they're talking about it was her father that sent the message. And I don't know, like, I felt like suddenly there was this whole aspect of redemption for Geno's character. I don't know, man. There was something about that that really drew me in. And then at the same time, I got a little trepidatious because, like, anytime I enjoy a trailer that much, I'm, like, afraid, like, you know, they're giving us the sparkly bits, you know? Like, I'm like, I hope there's as much action as this trailer is promising. Like, this isn't – we're seeing all the action just cut up and shown where when we get in the theater, it's like, where's the action? Where's the action, Bruce? They showed action, man. Like – You know,
this
like
is
we
the
get
trailer
like
of all the
minutes.
Action in the movie. The rest is just talking.
Yeah, like it's like the first opening of it's like episode 3. You know, where you get this great big battle and then there's nothing. You're like, wait, what else is there? And then like at the end, you got Hamill standing there with no talking. You're like, what the heck does it mean? Like, no, I mean, I don't know. Like, this is the one movie where I really don't know what I'm expecting. Aside from the whole, it's a war movie, so I'm expecting lots of bangs, lots of flashes, and all that kind of stuff. But then there's that side of me that's like, can we recover as a fandom from that much Star Wars? I mean, will we be like, it's all got to be dark from here on out? Are we going to go like, you know, Batman and just dark, darker than dark, darkest darkness kind of thing? I mean.
I hope not. I mean, I like dark movies. I like, you know, The Dark Knight on Batman and all that. But I don't want Star Wars to get too dark. I don't want it to be dark all the time. Let's have some light. Let's have some dark feelings to the different movies and such. This trailer, though, I haven't done a side-by-side comparison with the domestic trailer, but I felt like this trailer told a better summary of what the story's going to be about. And I like that idea, as you just mentioned, about the message that she received from her father. That created a personal connection. Mm-hmm. And that showed that he's on the inside reaching out to her.
Yeah.
He's in the Empire reaching out to her saying, hey, I've been employed here and I'm supposed to do this, but I need to get this message out to you guys that you need to come and save the day because there's some dangerous crap about to happen.
Yeah. There is so much going on. I like a lot of the motifs going on. Like, you know, you get the feeling that Jin and Andor are kind of like the Kyle Katarn and the Jan Ors. Kandor himself and his droid have a kind of a chewy feel, but honestly, I feel like it's more like Dash Rendar and Lebo. And we'll get more to that also when we talk about the Alan Turdick little story about how he voiced the droid. But again, man, there's just the cast, the side cast, were the characters that I didn't know much about them, and I don't have all their names locked down. I'm kind of trying to go into this as loose as I can. Like, I feel like if I know by sight everyone's names, I'm going to start putting things together. So I'm like trying not to get it right at this point.
Yeah, it's almost like you just want to get the surface of it, but don't go deep into it.
Yeah, and so there's some characters here that really interest the hell out of me. I mean, and the aspect of them being undercover, you know, having the Imperial cogs on their stuff, having the droid have the Imperial cogs on. There's so much about that that I honestly, like, you know, they talk, oh, it's a war story, oh, it's a war movie. But I think we forget how character-driven war stories typically are. You know, I mean, most people get caught up in the flash and the bang of the guns and the explosions and all that stuff, and they don't realize that typically it's regular individuals that are thrust into these situations. And one of the things that really, it was one of the odd observations I was seeing fans get was Saw Gerrera. And they're all like, well, he's got long hair and a long beard now, man. What's going on? Like, clearly, when we see him with the long hair and the beard, he hasn't been doing stuff. And obviously, somebody gets him back into the fight. And hence, that's why, at least that's the assumption I'm drawing here, is that we're seeing it that way. Like, the long hair is him, you know, scruffy. He's still the nerf herder. Jin shows up. She kind of, like, shakes him up. And he's like, you know, you're right. I'm a rebel. I rebel, too. I should shave my head. You know, I don't know. Like, it's funny that the reactions that the fans come up with are like, what's going on with his hair? Like, really? Like, of all the things in that trailer, that's the one you're focusing on? I still like Donnie Yen. Like, holy cow. Him and that baton. Like, ah. Arya Stark can learn a thing or two from him. I mean, if that guy's blind and he doesn't have the Force, he might as well be, because, oh, man, I want to know so much. And I think, like you said, this one really adds to the narrative in a way that none of the other trailers did. But again, I'm at that point where I'm like, okay, we could stop right here. Or at least so I thought. Then came the Beastie Boys mashup. Have you had a chance to check that one out, my man?
Oh, yeah, I saw a few times. Now, and it's awesome.
Now, that one, like, the funny one is, like, I think the biggest complaint I've seen with that is people going, All right, Star Trek has Sabotage. They got the Beastie Boys. Let's not be mixing our stuff. And you and I, we're fans of stars. You know, it doesn't matter if it's Star Wars, Star Trek, Battlestar Galactica. Right. You know, if it's space, we're there. You know, Firefly. I just need some stars in the background, a ship flying around in it. So that was one of those things, like, I don't care. I thought that what a great choice. And I like towards the end of the video when they tie up the alarm with the beat. I'm like, oh my god, that's some slick, like, even the punches and stuff were timed perfectly.
So do you think this played better in the Star Wars trailer than it did in the actual Star Trek Beyond trailer?
Well, see, I think that we have two different workings, because I really appreciated the use of that song in Star Trek Beyond. But the Star Trek Beyond, they utilized that as part of the plot, and I really got a kick out of that. I mean, it played with the fact that JJ was always a Beastie Boys fan, but see, JJ's brought that into Star Wars, because we got Ello Nasty, or Ello Asty, who is the Hello Nasty CD of Beastie Boys, because, you know, that's one of their best CDs out there, which, you know, you're going to get the great songs. I don't know. For me, when I think about how it works in this regard, I think it was just the perfect song to pump up the crowd. You know, I mean, you get back to the aspect of how they played up the hits. Like, the beats were going with the punching of the stormtroopers, the flipping of the baton. Like, I think that served a good... That's a perfect teaser music. Like, I don't know. I think it worked better in this case than it did for Star Trek. Because, like I said, Star Trek, they utilized it as a plot point, so that worked in a different way. This one just works just as the flash in the bang. You know, this is what a teaser trailer should be. And I think that they did a good job of doing that while giving us a mashup of big full trailers, but having it set to the music like they did with very little bits of dialogue. Like, I don't know. I thought that was one of the best trailers out there. And the fact that it was fan-made. At first, I didn't realize it was fan-made. I thought it was somebody had done it. Was like someone at the Star Wars show or something. You know, somebody that had some kind of an inside. I didn't realize it was complete fan-made. And I was just like, oh my god, that's pretty damn awesome, man. Fans are smart.
Yeah, if this were the actual trailer and this is the only trailer we got, then there'd be a lot of angry fans out there. And I don't even know if I would like it. But the fact that there's the real trailer, which feels like Star Wars and has Star Wars music in it, and then there would be this one. If this was an actual one, like a second one, I would be okay with it. As long as the Beastie Boys isn't in the Star Wars film, because it would make no sense why Rogue One in that universe would have Beastie Boys music. In Star Trek, it makes more sense because it actually takes place in our universe, just in the future.
Yep.
And so it was, quote, classical music, according to Scotty.
Yeah.
So, but as a trailer, you know, you can have fun with the trailers as long as it's not like within the movie itself.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, as we were talking a second ago about Rogue One, we also have Alan Tudyk had talked about being Queso or K2.
I know.
Yeah, I was going to say it was down here. Yeah, they say
I like
it so
queso
fast.
Dip. I'm craving Mexican now.
Yeah, because well, when they say it, it's more like K2, and it sounds like a name, and it always throws me off. But when I see it written down, I'm like, oh, K2. Uh-huh, I like how they do that. You know, they had this great little article talking about how he came up with the voice, you know, some of the background on K2, his relationship with Kandor. Am I even saying that right? Is it Kandor or is it Andor? No, it's Andor, isn't it?
I think it's Andor, which is confusing me because it's like Andorian from Star Trek. I went to Star Trek again. Didn't mean to do that.
Well, and then when I was watching the article, they kept going to the actor's name, Diego Luna's character. They're like, Diego Luna's. And I'm like, dude, that sounds like a cool Star Wars name. Who's Diego Luna? Like, I was just like, I thought for sure that was another, or maybe it is. I just don't even know. But they kept, you know, Diego Luna's character, Rebel Captain Cassani. See, and every time I see his name, I keep thinking Lando Calrissian. So that's what's throwing me.
Yes,
Cassian,
yes,
Andor. Like, his name, when I see it, it just throws me off. I could say it not looking at it, but the second I look at it, I'm like, Calrissian, no! But yeah, they were throwing around his name, the actor's name, and it kept throwing me off. I was like, okay, who's this other guy? But again, I didn't want to know. I didn't want to know, because then I'd be in that realm of perceptions. And I may already be there too much because of this article. It's a great little article. It talks about some of the great aspects that, I don't know, they're near and dear to my heart when it comes to Legends. And that is droid rights and the droid rebellion. It talks about the way that Queso ended up becoming in Kandor. See, that's what I'm doing. I'm dropping Cassian, the Asian from it, and just taking the C and adding it. That's why I'm going Kandor. I figured it out finally. Andor, he basically wipes K2's memory and stuff and frees him from a life of Imperial service. And what's interesting to me is there is a scene later, what they're talking about in this article, where he is around the other droids. And it creates a moment for him where he's looking at them and he's trying to figure it out, you know, why they are so different. Where is the actual line? Let's see. They talk also about Cassian and K2 being like Chewie and Han, which, like I said before, I really feel it's more Dash and Lebo, because like even Tudyk says Chewie's more emotional. So I'm looking forward to how he's going to play this character. He kept the accent English, which makes sense because everybody in the Empire, they're all talking English. So it makes sense the droids that are working with them talk English. But the one thing, again, getting back to that one thing, the droid rights movement. And I think that this is an interesting opportunity because we're going to be seeing a character who is a droid, who is basically the sum of their programming. And in this case, it's the lack of the programming which has set him free. We've seen cases like that with Chopper. We've seen cases like that in Legends with other droids, I-5, for example. But seeing one in canon, aside from Chopper himself and R2 himself, which is probably the best example, it'll be interesting to see a droid who is recently or somewhat recently mind-wiped, coming to conclusions and ideas, because this guy's working for the Rebellion. And the only other person we really see that talks to us about that kind of stuff is 3PO. And 3PO is kind of like, you know, for a lack of a better term, he's kind of like the blonde of the group. He really doesn't know what's going on, and he's embraced that. Like, you know,
it's like golden hair that he's got.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
That's why he's the blonde.
He's got the 4 billion languages. He doesn't need common sense. So I don't know. Like, that's an angle I'm really looking forward to. When we see Queso get around the other Queso droids, what will that be like? You know, what's like? I really hope that that's not one of those opportunities that they drop it. I hope it's not like the C-3PO comic where we learn how he got the arm, and we're like, really? That's all? Like, Like, for me, this is a big moment. I mean, we only have very few instances like this in Legends. Like, one of them being the BB-8 story where he almost took over the Death Star and he was taking over a bunch of droids. Like, we don't get that much in the chassis of the droid. And then to have one that's recently freed coming across basically slaves, I think that that's a profound moment that they could really play up and get to a human angle by dealing with a character that has really no humanity.
Yeah, it's like you're going to really feel for this droid, even though it's not a human. You might get to a point where it's like you really relate to him and the fact that he has been suppressed. And he may not even realize it because his memory has been wiped. But then when he meets his brothers, these other droids, he starts to learn that this is what his life was and how unfair that is. And it could be a very emotional scene, very relatable.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the other things says the friendship goes back long before the start of Rogue One. They've been around. They've been together for a while, for a couple years, Alan says. He wants what Cassian wants. He loves Cassian because he freed him. It's also more parental in that Cassian gave him life and took away the bonds of his programming. So that's an angle that I also want to see. I like to see.
So his mind isn't necessarily wiped, is it? Or is it just his programming has been altered?
Yeah, it's basically the programming, I would think. I would think that, well, I mean, it would really come down to how good of a slicer Cassian is. But I like the idea that they talk about him being paternal, which does kind of lead you to the feeling that Queso's got some rudimentary programming still left. Probably like a core processing unit. Like you wipe away this and it's like a factory reset. That would probably make the most sense, because I would think anything else, you're going to be looking at something closer to Mr. Bones. It's like completely, I like hugging. It's very violent. You're like, oh my lord, this droid's lost it. And I don't get that feeling from K2 himself or Queso himself. See, that's, I want to call him Queso. I keep going Queso because
there's that dip again.
Yep.
Queso dip.
Queso dip. Yep. That's the differences I've noticed between reading a book and listening to a book in audio. I'm like, when I'm reading their names, going, oh, yeah, that's what their names look like. Mark Thompson, you've ruined me for reading.
Yeah, see, sometimes I'll read a book and then I'll hear the audiobook. I'm like, oh, that's the pronunciation of the name. I wasn't even thinking it that way in my head when I read it. Then you hear it in the audio and it's different.
Yeah, yeah. Alan went on, and this is the one where he talks about the scene in which K2 encounters other droids of his model still serving the Empire without question, without recourse, without much hope. He talks about it being a bittersweet moment for the droid who doesn't feel that sort of thing. So that's something, like I said, I'm really excited about that. He goes, you do meet other K2s, they don't have as much free will. You see them, and yeah, it's not him. You know, like I said, that free droid thing, you know, aside from BB-8, we also see something similar with the Yuuzhan Vong, where they were coming around and wiping out the droids. I think that was probably the last in the ongoing story that they really dealt with that. There was always this talk that, like, in the Old Republic, that there was a big droid revolt, which kind of led to the feeling that you got that some of the people in the Outer Rim and stuff, why they didn't trust the droids of the Confederate Army, because there was a droid revolt. But they always kept it kind of on the back burner. So I'm kind of really hoping that, like, they inject some of that lore into the canon through this. Like, this is a good opportunity. And I think that that's something that I really picked up from these trailers, is like, there are these, you know, I've mentioned, you know, the Kyle and the Jan, we've got the Dash and the Lebo. It seems like there's all these Legends archetypes or character types that are making their way over in new ways. I mean, we've seen Thrawn come over, we've seen Quinlan Vos do the jump before Legends became Legends, and it just, that's the kind of stuff that I really get a kick out of, is even if they're not doing it on purpose, the fact that I can look and I can see those similarities, that's something that just excites me. I don't know if that's something you get a kick out of, but I think it's clear to say that most people are pretty dang excited for this, even though we really have no idea aside from it being a war film.
True. And as you're talking, I start thinking about the K2 units on the Death Star. I thought, wouldn't it be cool if they superimposed some K2s in the background of a scene on A New Hope on the next, like, Blu-ray release or something, and you can see one in the background just walking around, or a crew of them. That would be really awesome.
See, and that's the kind of additions that I would be down for. You know, like, don't give me an additional wall in front of R2. You know, don't give me a blinking Ewok. Add those droids, you know, like you did the asteroids. Maybe fix the top of the blue escape pad. Finally, I like the ones that help the film move forward. forward in a way that makes sense. Like, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Speaking of moving forward, though, there is a rumor of one of the new films, the standalone films, moving forward. And you know, we've heard this talk before, but a young Lando film, or at least a new Lando in the Han Solo movie, which could lead later to a potential Lando film. And I guess they're looking still at Donald Glover to be the top choice for the role. One of the interesting things I found from the article is that they talk about Glover is currently working on Spider-Man Homecoming, and it's unclear whether he's interested in Star Wars' role at this stage. Unclear. I think if you asked Donald Glover this, I think he'd be pretty clear that the answer is yes. What do you think, Bruce?
Yeah, I think so, too. I think it's pretty obvious that there's a good chance we'll see a young Lando Calrissian in the young Han Solo movie. I mean, why not? Why not go there? I mean, I don't even think they've even announced that we're actually going to see Chewbacca in this movie. We really don't know much about this movie. Is that right? I mean, we haven't heard Chewbacca or anybody.
No, you're right. That's a good point. Like, and I don't know how I feel. We don't even know exactly when this is set, though, do we? Like, is it 10 years before A New Hope, or did they not even lock that in?
I don't know if it was a rumor, but I think I heard about 10 years. Or maybe it was based on the actor's age, current age, or something like that. But maybe it's even a little further back. It could be Han when he's 19. When we saw Luke and Leia at that age, why not see Han at that age? I don't know. I don't know. I don't want to speculate too much about it because we've got like a whole nother, 2 years to do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, we really don't know anything except who's cast in the movie.
Well, and depending on where it's at, I think that depends on what I'd want to see from Lando Calrissian and even Chewbacca for that matter. Like, okay, say this movie takes place 5 years before A New Hope. If it was to take place 5 years before A New Hope, I would want Chewie to already be in the film. I would want Chewie to already be Han's partner. I want that relationship to already be pre-established. Lando in a 5 year from film, I think Lando should be a rival at this point. You know, like maybe even have him lose the Falcon to Han if you haven't already had it just happen, kind of thing. Have some of that animosity. Now, if you're going 10 years out or 15 years away, then I would want different things for each of these characters. Like Lando, I would like to see an introduction. You know, I'd like to see Han and Lando meet for the first time. Or maybe the first couple times that they met, you know, like maybe the first time they met, it was just kind of like a in passing kind of thing with Jabba, or, you know, just a friend of a friend kind of thing. Oh yeah, I remember you at that one party kind of thing. And then they meet again and then they have some, you know, exploits, to really build the relationship around. But if we're in that 10 to 15 years from A New Hope point, I want a story where we find out how Han and Chewie have the life debt, how Han saves him. You know, we've got legends where we know that Han was an Imperial cadet and Chewie was a slave and Han threw away his career to save Chewie. I personally don't want to see that story still be the backstory for Solo in canon, because I don't feel like the direction of him is going to be the same as what it was in Legends. Like, they were really pushing more for the Han shot first rogue in Legends, whereas now it's like Han shot second. Han's not so scoundrel. He's just more of a pirate, and therefore, because he's a pirate, the word scoundrel follows him around like a bad name that he just can't shake, because he's not really a bad guy. Like, I don't know. So, like, they've got that opportunity again to really change our perception of the character. So, depending on where they place it, my perception of what I would like to see shifts significantly.
Yeah, I wonder how much they're going to make Han a badder Han than we see in the later trilogy. I mean, he gets to be less rogue and more of less of a pirate as we get further into the trilogy. But when we see a younger Han, is he going to be getting himself into trouble? Is he kind of a jerk? I mean, and will they create a scene where he shoots first? I have a feeling they're going to do something like that where people go, there you go.
Yep.
Han shot first. Did you see that? He shot first, so he's been redeemed.
No, you're right. They totally should. They absolutely should. And a very minor, and I'm thinking of you, Michael Morris of Cloud City Casino. This is super minor. Life debt spoiler for you. You can jump ahead 5 seconds even. Han's noted in saying that Chewie saved him, that his life when he was younger, he made poor choices and it was Chewie that kept him on the straight and narrow. And so that's the angle that I really would like to see, because that's kind of it seems like all the new books are kind of putting Han in that kind of like the Smuggler's Dawn, the Han Solo trilogy, when he was, you know, when he was first working for the smugglers back then. Like, I get that feeling. Like, that's the backstory they're going to, back when he was on Yelsa and that kind of stuff. So, I don't know. Like I
they,
hope
they need to, because his character grows. It progresses throughout the movie. So you don't want to have him nice and then he becomes more of a scoundrel later and then he becomes a nicer guy. I mean, his character has developed. So we really should see, almost like when we leave the theater, think, man, when Han was younger, he was a piece of work, man. He's almost kind of a jerk. You know, I like Han as he gets older. You know, it's almost that feeling should come out of that.
Yes. I kind of hope they do a Indiana Jones comparison again. Legends, it was him with bugs, like how Indy had with snakes. Han hated insects. He had an incident where a bunch of insects swarmed him on a planet with Chewie. And from that moment on, he hated insects. And so later, when his daughter joins the cliques and stuff, he has this whole bug hugger moment where he's just freaking out. And I would almost like to see something like that with droids instead, where that's where Han's distrust for droids comes from, because like somehow he got like caught in some kind of compactor droid that thought he was a hay bale and was trying to give him a haircut or something, like it just scarred him for life.
Yeah, I like those ideas. That would be fun, because it'd be nice little connections like that through the movies.
Every time he looks at a protocol droid, he's just reminded of the bad haircut. He's like, Goldenrod, no, go, just get out of here. Now, when they talk about Donald Glover as the Lando Calrissian, I don't know how I feel about that. Because honestly, on one hand, I'm kind of like, Billy Dee Williams' son, and I can't think of what his name was, but he just looks so much like him. I just don't know if he's the right age still. Like, he might now be past that age. Like, he might play a better Lando right now than his dad, kind of thing. Like, I don't know how that fits, but that's who I always think of playing a young Han or a young Lando, when I always thought about that. But Donald Glover does have the right kind of look. I just kind of want to see him with the cape at this point, the little satchel type thing strapped around with the cape, going with the little badges. Like, I think he could pull Miles Morales and really nail this role. I don't know. What do you think, Bruce?
Well, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about the age so much, so I just looked it up, and Donald Glover right now is 32 years old, and I'm looking up here, and Billy Dee Williams looked to be about in his mid-40s when he played Lando. Why am I keep stumbling on Lando's name today?
It's my fault.
But when Billy Dee Williams, so he was born, what, 37, 47, 57, 60? Yeah, he was in his mid-40s when he first played Lando, which I thought he was younger than that. But,
oh, really?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's almost going back to your theory again about maybe 10, 15 years earlier. This would work, age-wise,
and
if you base the actors.
Let's see here. And when was Corey Williams born?
He was born Corey Williams. Let's see.
Corey D. Williams. Uh-huh. He was born in 1960.
Oops. Really?
Wow, they're both older. Wow, yeah, looking at him on... Wow, okay, so... Yeah, I'm just used to seeing a bunch of nostalgic shots of when he was much younger, too.
So Corey D. Williams is in his 50s.
So Corey D. Williams could actually play Lando in a role between 6 and 7, probably.
Ah. Wow. Hey, there's another spinoff film idea.
Or a deleted end credit scene. Can you imagine, like, them sitting in Maz's cantina or something, and Maz comes up, oh, my Wookiee. She's, like, stroking Chewie's pelt or something. You're like, oh, my God. It'd be like the Avengers when they're sitting around eating dinner. You're like, what is this?
Oh, my gosh. There's so much to mine. We got so many movies we have to make. We need to call Disney right now. We've got another idea.
Yeah. Now, in the realm of, okay, so this rumor is just if he's going to be in the Han Solo film. Let's go further down this rumor trail here. Now, if he was to get his own film series, what type of film do you think it would be? I mean, I couldn't imagine in a million years him doing any of the Lando books in a series, even adapting minorly. Those were some pretty out there books. But we do know he's a gambler, and he has some smuggler ties. What type of story do you think you'd like to see a Lando film if he had a standalone film?
I don't know why I feel this way, but I don't think Landa could stand on his own. I think it would be more of an ensemble cast. So I would say it's almost, I guess, going back to the last Timothy Zahn novel, more of like a
Scoundrels.
Ocean's 11 type of thing. Yeah, the Scoundrels novel, almost, you know, where he's in a band of other people. Like, he's got this whole either group behind him, or he's just part of a larger group. I don't know if there's much to do with a standalone Lando takes the lead. I don't know if I'd want to see that. You know, I think with Han, it's different because I think it's setting up his origin and maybe meeting Chewbacca. I'm interested in that. But if Lando's already out there doing his thing, I like to see him with a big ensemble cast. And he's got like people that he's always like fighting with and not getting along with. And they maybe got this like mission, like they are going to rob a casino together, kind of like the Ocean's 11. I'd love to see that type of movie.
What if the Battle of Tanab was something like what we saw with Vaw and Skirata in Karen Travis's books, where they robbed the bank in the middle of the war, where we see Lando and them are doing something similar, where he does an Ocean's 11 robbery in the middle of the Battle of Tanab. And therefore, when he says, you know, they must have heard about the Battle of Tanab, it makes a little more sense.
Oh, that would be a great little connection there. I like that idea. Or maybe it's even something where he robs the rebels. You know, and then he goes and joins them later.
That would be some funny irony right there. Yeah, especially with him playing the fact that they don't know. Because then you could have that double angle. Like, oh, dude, like, if they find out that you actually sold that, you stole it from the rebels and you sold it to the imps. And, like, you find out he had no choice. But, like, the fact that that could come out, like, oh, that could be like a bloodline type story. Ooh.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
He's got the shifty background. I think I get stuck on that Battle of Tanab comment. And I think that that's where I feel like you do, where like he shouldn't be leading his own group. He should be like the ensemble cast. Like, yeah. I feel like when we see him flying the Falcon, that's really his true moment to lead. Like, we've seen him as a Baron Administrator for Cloud City, and that really was his experience leading. But aside from having a set role, you know, like, hey, this is me, I'm the Baron Administrator. Like, until they gave him the role as general, leading in combat wasn't his thing. He wasn't going to voluntarily put that wonderful cloak in the crosshairs, you know.
You know, I haven't seen the movie Suicide Squad yet, but I'm thinking something along those lines. Maybe not as violent and dark, but something like that, where he's, you know, in trouble and somebody recruits him to do a job, him with a team of other scoundrels.
Yeah, no, I just saw that the other day. I could see him as a Captain Boomerang, you know, not quite a Deadshot because he doesn't have those skills, but maybe a Deadshot if the skills were gambling. That, you know, kind of like, you know, yeah, I just keep getting back to Ocean's 11. Yeah, no, I could see him playing a total role like that. The gambler really needs to be gambling. You know, that's really the heart of it. I want to see him doing some stuff on, oh, man. I'm drawing the biggest blank of that planet right now. It's the one, above Kessel, next to Kessel, that was all the smugglers went to all the time. They always talked about it being Little Coruscant. Oh, the Smuggler's Moon is all I can think of, and I can't think of anything else. But something on the Smuggler's Moon would be a great little story there. Man, why am I drawing a blank on the name of that planet? Anyway, Lando's a character.
Is it called Nar Shada?
Yeah, that's the one. Like, yeah, like,
see,
Nar Shada is the Vegas of Star Wars.
I beat the Legends Guru.
You did. That's what happens when I'm up before 8 a.m.
Thank you, Google, for helping me with this.
Nice. And, you know, we'll get one of those one-off comments. Every time I'm not on the episode, I'm doing that. I'm, Bib Fortuna! The Twi'lek was Bib Fortuna!
Hey, I think the only reason the name came to me at that one moment is because through the Force, I could hear you screaming that.
Probably. Yes, this is probably true. So, yeah, Lando is a character that I didn't think I would be as excited for as I am. But I think if we see him show up in the Han Solo movie, I think rumors of him getting his own movie probably have a leg to stand on.
We shall see. Oh, yes.
All right. And with that, we have...
Hey, should we do some Boba's Bounty?
We should do some Boba's Bounty. Let's do this quick plug and go into Boba's Bounty.
This is the Star Wars Report Podcast, and I thought they smelled bad on the outside.
He's worth a lot to me. As you wish.
As you wish. That's right, Boba's Bounty, where we look at something in the world of Star Wars that we're doing, liking, looking at, talking about, or watching again. And in this case, for me, you know, I was up at a Star Wars camp. I was at a Cub Scout camp. Oh, gosh, I'm just all over the place. It was a Boy Scout camp. I know, my troop out there, if you guys are listening, I apologize. I know, I talk about Cub Scouts way too much. this is also part of my Boba's Bounty. We had a skit at camp. We do skits every, you know, your first day at camp. The staff does skits to give you ideas, and then throughout the week you come up with skits. And then usually at the end of camp, we perform the skits. Well, this camp did things a little different. They did their first one, and then middle of the week they allowed us to do ours. And then at the end of the week, they had this great production at the cafeteria where they had light show and all this stuff, a big stage. And then the staff put on a movie type skits. And so our skit, when we did our skit, we had two of them. One of them was a Billy Mays infomercial. You know, hey, you have a problem with feeding and watering pets? Well, we got the pet for you. It's Pet Rock. You know, stupid little stuff like that. So the other one we did has the title of Funniest Skit in Camp History. And we did A Day in the Life of Camp McQuala, where we spoofed the staff. Well, some of the staff, the guy that runs the camp is one of our scoutmasters for our troop. So we kind of knew we had an in there. And some of the other of our older scouts were counselors and staffers there in camp. So we were, you know, having some fun with all of them and just nailed it. A 4.5 minute skit where everybody that could have been spoofed got spoofed. So much so.
So was this pre-planned or did you guys just like, you were just improv? It was just like
pre-planned improv. We came up with it that day and made it happen that night. So, like, it had some planning, but it was literally like, guys, you know, yesterday we were supposed to work on a skit. We didn't. We got to get it done. We've got, like, 30 minutes now before classes, and then we're not going to have any time. We got to do a skit. So, and luckily staff did the same thing. Like, so from the moment this came out, they were like, we've got to get revenge. So we knew revenge was coming, right? But they never had the chance to sit down until 30 minutes before theirs. But we thought all this time that they had the planning. We're just like, oh, we're going to get it so bad. So, and I shared this on Facebook. I'll have to share the link too. But I'm always talking about the lava beds and stuff and Star Wars. So of course, those are the prime things. Like the guy that comes out spoofing me has got the facial hair, the long hair, like everything that I was doing, he had down. He had a Star Wars coffee cup. I'm like, oh my God, I was dying. Like it was just so perfect. And he's like, hey guys, do you know where they filmed Star Wars? In the lava tubes. I was just like, oh my God, this is too much. Like I was dying. Like that they just had us so dead to rights. Like everything I was doing was Star Wars. The funny thing was like I'm known for being on Facebook everywhere I go because I'm always sharing the adventures on Facebook. But while we're up there, we're in no signal. So I was constantly walking around trying to get signal. And you know, Don, he's the camp director. He always flicks me a hard time for that. I was like, man, I really was expecting you to be on that one, Don. He's like, oh, I didn't even think about it. Because, like, they had the camera strap around the back, my walking stick, my hat on, my shades on. Like, everything I was doing, they had done it. And the night of, we were like 30 minutes before we started doing the skits. And I had a feeling at that point I knew that Tony was the guy going to get me. Because I was sitting there eating and I watched Tony in line and I was saying something to one of the scouts and I watched he was mimicking my gestures and I'm like oh I think I know who's playing. I turned over to Johnny. I'm like, oh, Tony's playing me. I was excited because Tony looked the most like me. I was like, if somebody's gonna spoof me, I hope it's Tony. And sure enough, it was Tony. I was like, yeah.
So we get to see Tony. You got video of this of him imitating
you? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it was fun. Of course, you know, it's a lot of inside jokes. So, like, you're watching, you're like, ha, it's kind of lame. Of course, to the scouts right. That were at camp, we're just rolling, laughing so hard. Like, in the one, and I don't have the full copy of it because my camera ran out of memory. I had to delete a bunch of family photos and stuff to get more memory. But the one that we did, I only have like the first 30 seconds of it, and I'm waiting for someone that was at the camp. They've got the rest of it, and they're going to get it back to me because Our other scoutmaster, the director, was laughing so hard he fell out of his chair like three or four times because of inside jokes we had. Like, because Oliver is one of our senior patrol leaders, and he was the astrology kid, and he's got somewhat of a lisp. So Johnny, our scoutmaster, had asked Oliver, he's like, hey, you know, I've known you since you were four. Do you mind if I spoof you doing your star party? And he's like, yeah. And so he goes out there, and he's like, today we're going to have a star party, and we are going to eat Milky Ways under the Milky Way, and we are going to feed Spriglet Squirrel these nuts. And he holds up a bag of trail mix, you know, and so everybody just goes nuts, you know, just these stupid little one-liners and stuff. And everyone's laughing really hard because the whole Milky Way while eating a Milky Way was something he tried to say during one of the openings, but he just couldn't get it out. He kept tripping over the word Milky Way and into Milky Way. So we were, you know, we're saying it. And of course, you know, on like our third days doing the flags, one of our groups of boys has a hard time doing flags. So they named their skit Troop 122 at flags. We're like, oh crap. We're just like, as soon as they did that, we're like, the worst thing you can do is screw up on morning flags. Like, you know, like that's like the most honorable position ever. Everybody's got to be like perfect. And of course, our morning flags, we had one group down at one end, which was one of our older scouts, had the hardest time getting the flag on. And we're just like, oh no, that's what they're going to talk about. Of course, that wasn't, but we were just like, you know, we thought for this whole time, 3 days, that's all they were doing was just getting ready to just nail us, man. I was like, oh.
You know what, Mark? I don't think you do this camp for your son. I think it's for yourself. You're having too good of a time.
That's where the whole Cub Scout thing comes in, because I was only a Cub Scout. I am literally living Boy Scouts through my son right now. I'm like, I'm in scouting. I'm a Boy Scout. Yeah. They're like, you're a leader, dude. Get out of the line. You're not going to shoot the rifle.
All right.
Like, but come
on. Oh, shit.
Yeah. Well, so we had that. It was a really fun time, real fun skit, real fun spoof. And while all that was going on, Ahsoka had managed to come in, which has been a really cool ride. I don't know much about E.K. Johnson's stuff, but holy cow, that lady can write. She's drawn me right in. This book so far, and again, for you, Michael Morris, I'm keeping this very spoiler-free. This book is close to what I could say is the current Luke Skywalker in Legend stories. And if you've been listening to the show, you know that those were always my favorite Legend stories. Those were the stories that I could grab and have that book read in about 2 to 3 days, if not in one sitting. And this book, had it not been for the scout camp and the haunted house, that we just got a huge haunted house and all this stuff going on, if it wasn't for that stuff going on, I would be done with this book. I am desperately trying to keep this book in my hands and get further into it. It's doing some really cool things with some intermissions that are really cool. Again, I'm keeping it so spoiler free, but you should check this book out when it comes out. I've got the advanced review copy, so it'll be a while before you guys see it.
It's October 11th when the book comes out.
Yes, when it comes, rush out, grab this one. You won't be disappointed. It's been a super cool ride, and if you're a fan of Ahsoka, it gives you that insight that you've been itching for.
I'm surprised they sent you a book so early. I mean, 2 months. I mean, it's quite a while till this novel actually comes out.
That honestly, like, usually it's like 2 days after the book came out that I've been getting it. It's been, I would say, since the Legends switch, like, my book advanced copy getting, I couldn't say that any harder if I tried, it's been delayed. Like, I swear, like, the books are out and 3 days later I'm getting it. And I'm just like, I'm a slow reader as is typically. Like,
But that's why they sent you the book now, because they knew it would take you 2 months to get through it.
Yeah, they're like, finally, we're going to get a review out of this guy yet.
Without giving away spoilers, right, Michael Morris? okay, so this is what I got. So I didn't get it this week, but a lot of things happened with this item this past week. So when I was at Star Wars Celebration Europe, one of our patrons with Patreon, Neil Lowry, who lives there in England, so he made it easy for him to get to Celebration. He was on VIP. He was doing all the great stuff, meeting everybody. And he gave me an assortment of little gifts. And I'm talking about, like, you know, like a packet that had, like, a Star Wars eraser and ruler and pad and pencil. The pencil looks like a lightsaber and stuff. Yeah. So I've kind of shared some of that with my daughter because she was like, I want this. So I had to, you know, kind of give her half of the stuff and I keep the other half. But one of the items he gave me was this pen. And it's, you know, a bit thick pen, and it looks like R2-D2. It's got all the R2-D2 markings on the pen, but it's shaped like a pen. So I take this to work with me, and I thought, oh, this would be cool. I'll use the R2 pen when I'm at work. And then I noticed there's like this little button on the side. It has a little tab sticking out. I was like, oh, it's one of those things you got to remove the tab for some electronic to work. I bet it makes an R2 sound. Well, I push the button, and it's like this flashlight comes on.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, oh, it's a little flashlight. And I'm just kind of shining it around, but it doesn't have that round light look. Instead, if it's this, like, you know, bar or something, this white bar coming out of it. I was like, that's really odd looking. So I turn off the lights and I hold it up to the wall, and it's an image of Princess Leia from You're My Only Hope.
Oh, it's the sliding the data port in.
Yeah, it's the image of her when Luke saw her on Tatooine when her image came out of R2.
Nice.
When she's like, help me, Obi-Wan, you're my only hope. It's that image of her. And I was like, so cool. Of course it's being projected out of R2-D2.
Yeah.
And of course, everybody in the office that comes by, I have to tell them about it. And whether they're Star Wars fans or not, they all freak out about it. And they were like, wait, give me the pen. Let me go around here. And they go around and people are like Snapchatting it and you know, taking video.
So awesome.
Everybody's like really cool about this thing. So thank you, Neil. That was really awesome. Everybody's having fun with it. I'm just glad no one stole it from me yet.
That's cool. See, I have a similar one my son got that he ended up lending to me. That's such a lie. It's the Chewbacca the journal notebook. I don't know if you could hear it. When you open it, it actually growls. And it's furry. It's got the bandolier across it. And that one came with a First Order pin that when you push the button, it's got a picture of the First Order helmet with the logo behind it. And I was always like, oh, that's cool. But yeah, I know what you're talking about. I don't, the R2 one, though, that sounds way too much fun, man. I'd be doing the same thing. How, when you stand back about like 4 or 5 feet, does it actually maintain the quality of the image, or does it get blurry when you make it really big?
Actually, the bigger you stand back, if you're in a really dark room, you can make it pretty big. 4 or 5 feet, it still looks really good. I have tried that. I mean, I've stood across from my office and shined up on the wall, and the image can be like almost 2 feet high, and it still looks good.
Yeah, I'm doing mine now. It's cool. I had it backwards. It's when you get it closer that it gets blurry. Oh, so yeah.
Yeah, which is really odd. It actually looks better the further away you are.
That's cool. Yeah, I'll have to look for that one. Because like this one, like, yeah, it's a cool Stormtrooper helmet, but like, yeah, you can't get interactive like that. Help me, Obi. Like, you know, I could just see somebody holding their hand underneath it and like trying to get the perfect angle, or they're talking to her.
Yeah, I know. Someone's like, oh, well, too bad you don't actually hear her. I'm like, look, let's be thankful we got a really great image. I like it the way it is.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So with that, let's move into another bumper and go right into some email feedback.
You're listening to the Star Wars Report. Many Bothans died to bring you this podcast.
Many Bothans died to bring you this podcast, not last week's podcast, or maybe last week's podcast and this one.
It doesn't matter because it wasn't a Death Star, so fans aren't confused about the Bothans dying here. Right, Bruce? Right?
That is so correct. Many Bothans died to bring you all these podcasts.
I'm so glad we invested in those Sparty cylinders. Got to clone them as quick as we can. Our feedback this week comes from John Lowe. John writes, hey, SWR, while riding around on patrol and listening to episode 234, the Rey lineage discussion calls me to pull over on the side of I-285 just to send this email. Awesome. I'm glad you stopped the car and had everyone's safety in mind, not just your own, because
I just love it. He can't wait to get to where he's going. He's got to pull over right now. That is so awesome.
That is, you know, and I've had some moments like that where I'm like, if I don't write this down right now, even if I'm texting it to myself, I'm going to forget. And so, like, I've been there. This is in regards to whether or not Rey is a Solo. If you remember, Leia did say to Finn, Han told me about the girl. Also, towards the end of your discussion, somebody made the comment that Luke and Jen Erso are roughly the same age. If you remember the Rogue One sizzle reel, that's what the word was, Bruce, sizzle reel.
Oh, that's what you're looking for.
From Celebration, there was a brief but very distinctive profile shot of a female wearing a Rey-style hair. He goes, I know we have seen this in Star Wars before. There were some young girls in The Phantom Menace with this haircut. But have a distinct shot of an unknown character with the same hairstyle as Rey, who is a huge lead character in the new Star Wars universe, to me is by no means coincidental. If I remember correctly, Rey had the same style as the little girl in her vision. Not saying it may be her parentage, but there may be something to this. I'm not saying, I'm just saying. I like how he says that. And keep up the great work, and may the Force be with you, John Lowe. Well, you know, life, death, spoiler, not spoiler, Michael Morris. Leia has a vision in that book, and in that vision, it was an alternate slash possible future where she had kids with an S. So I was kind of, you know, that jumped up to me when that came up. So
how did I miss that? That's in the book?
That was in the book.
It didn't hit me until you actually said it. It didn't hit me when I read it, but that's so cool. So she had a vision of a possible future with kids.
Yeah, which, of course, you know, I took as like clearly that was a Jaina and Jacen Solo.
Yeah, like that's thing, what but, I think. Yeah, definitely.
But the Jen Erso having the same hairstyle. Kind of does have some credence there, because Jen Erso, even if she happens to steal these Death Star plans and get them to one Princess Leia, who happens to get them to a rebellion, who happens to fly one pilot named Luke Skywalker Rogue 5 Red 5 down the gullet of the Death Star and blows up said Death Star, therefore making Jen Erso and her team famous, which I don't think will happen, I don't think Rey's going to learn about these people out on Jakku or learn about the hairstyle. So maybe it is a connection, because I don't see the Jen Erso hairstyle being a popular Jakku trend. So maybe it is a connection.
It could be. I mean, we don't see a lot of females her age on Jakku either to compare hairstyles. I don't think there's a hair salon that they all like go to and talk and gossip and such. I don't know, but the comment also that John makes about Luke and Jen being roughly the same age, that's one thing I've also wondered, is because is Jen supposed to be about the age of Luke? Because Luke is, you know, by A New Hope, he's 19, mm-hmm. and Felicity Jones, I mean, I know the character doesn't have to be the same age as the actress, but she's 32.
Yeah, I get a 27 vibe from her character. Like, I see her closer to 30 than 20 myself.
Yeah, and if Luke, you know, hooks up with her and, you know, he's got an older woman, hey, good for Luke, you know? I didn't know he had it in him. But I don't get the sense in the other movies that, you know, he's a playboy. But yeah. I don't know.
You know, John, I typically lean your direction on these connections. I mean, I'm like, I saw Ezra holding a green cross lightsaber, and I was like, there better be more of a connection than the fact that he's holding one. So I'm with you. Like, I want some connections here. If that's the one, I don't know if I'm on that one. I'm still kind of hoping for Jaina Jade Solo, or I mean Jaina Jade Skywalker, or I just want Mara to now be Jaina, so Jaina's still in canon. not gonna happen, I know, but still, I don't know. I'm a guy, you guys all know me, I want those connections, I like those connections, I enjoy those connections. I don't find that having the connections that make the Star Wars universe smaller, I don't find that they take away from the overall story. I know that some people out there do, to each their own. But for me, I find that enriches the story. So I don't know if I'd be happy if it's Jen Erso, but I don't think I'd be upset either.
Yeah, same here. I mean, I don't care really either way.
Yeah, I think once this movie comes out, I may change my tune. I may be like, you know what? Jen Erso is so damn cool. Like, she needs to be in everything. She needs to be the new Rey Sloan for the Rebellion. Move over, Leia Organa. Here is Jen Erso. And that, my friends, is why on Jakku that hairstyle is trending. Because Jen Erso is that awesome. Like, I don't know. Maybe that'll be the case. I'm willing to give it a shot.
There's posters of her everywhere at Jakku. She's like a big celebrity there.
Yeah, exactly. I'm willing to give it a go. I don't know about you, Bruce. So that about wraps up the show. I think we've hit the topic points that we needed. I think we've covered the hour and some odd minutes that we needed to do. I think it's time for that contact information, don't you, buddy?
I think so. I think we're good to wrap this thing up.
That's right. You guys know where to find us. You can go to www.StarWarsReport.com. You can find us on Facebook, Star Wars Report. You can find us on Twitter, /StarWarsReport. You can find us on iTunes, which we always encourage you guys to leave us a review. And again, our Patreon supporters, patreon.com/StarWarsReport. If it wasn't for you guys, we wouldn't be doing this every single week. And if it wasn't for all the contributions and you guys hitting that one milestone, we wouldn't have been putting out the extra bonus episodes that we've been putting out. All of this has been because of your support. You know, I can't say it enough. Riley can't say it enough. Bruce, when he's on and talking about it, he can't say it enough, because literally everything we're doing behind the scenes, it's been made possible because of you guys and a little bit.
And I can't say enough the fact that we actually have a online meetup with those patrons who donate $15 or more. We've got one coming up Monday the 29th at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So there's still time. If you want to donate $15 right now as a patron, then you could be on that meetup with Riley. And Mark, I don't know if you'll be available, but we're going for the 29th.
I always panic because you and Riley always say everything in Eastern Time first. And I'm like, oh, man, that's right in the middle of a scout meeting. And then I was like, oh, wait, no, four. I'm good. I'm golden. Yeah.
All right. There you go. So everybody, Let's do this. It'll be fun. We'll all be in there talking about Star Wars stuff.
That's right. You can also find Riley. He is the Riley Guy on Twitter. Bethany is Bethany L. Blanton on Twitter. I am Illogical Rogue 2. Bruce, I believe you're Admiral Rex. Is that with an underscore?
Yeah, Admiral _ Rex.
That's right. That's right. And of course, you know it. You've seen it. www.StarWarsReport.com. With that, I think we should probably have some music going while I'm doing all this stuff. Now that I kind of think about it, kind of dropping the ball here, Bruce. Got to have the outro music. Yeah, there we go. Feels a lot better now. So once again, boys and girls, gals and guys, it's been a pleasure, a good old time. We've gone so long, I can't talk anymore. My voice is run down like a droid with a bad processor like Mr. Bones. Bruce, couldn't have done the show without you, my man. Good to have you on. I'll turn this music down so you can kind of get some words in real quick. Unless you've taken off and that's why your Skype chat's there. Yes. You can't hear, but as the music's playing. Bruce is saying goodbye once again to everybody. The music, my setup isn't quite as nice as Riley's, so he can't hear me. But you can. And with that, we're going to say goodnight, good morning, good afternoon. Please delete as appropriate. This has been the Star Wars Report Podcast.
Thank you for riding Star Tours.
Bye-bye.
Yay! It's a wrap.
That is so weird when you play music. I can't hear the music and I can't hear you. It's just like dead silence.
And that's new because like a while back that wasn't the case.